Hello, welcome to Pictures and Popcorn. I am Matt.
And I am Lenny, and today we're going to be talking about The King of Staten Island. It came out last week, and if you haven't seen it yet, just fair warning, we're going to be talking a lot of spoilers in this, so if you haven't seen it, go watch it first, and we'll do a nice deep dive for you. So, The King of Staten Island came out like a week ago, so last Friday. I watched it like pretty much on launch day, and you watched it today?
Yeah, I watched it a lot more recent than you did. So
you say a lot more. It's only been like a week, but yeah, I've been thinking yeah. about it a wee bit. So like, I wasn't really aware of this film until maybe only a few weeks ago, and there was just a trailer on YouTube, and I very rarely will watch a trailer for a film, never mind a trailer for a film that's an ad on YouTube, but I watched it all the way through to the end because I wanted to see the title, because I wanted to definitely watch it because of how much I thought I would like the film, like just from that trailer.
Yeah, no, I think that is exactly the same thing as me, like yeah. verbatim, that is exactly what I did.
And then like it came out, it was like, all right, cool, yeah. And then I'll just start by saying it. It kind of disappointed me a little bit. So I don't know why. When I started watching it, I was thinking, oh, I didn't know this was just like a full-blown comedy. So then I kind of got accustomed to the fact that, oh, this is just a comedy and it's got comedians in it. That makes sense why Bill Burr's in it, even though he has been doing a lot of other acting roles recently. And then the second half sort of forgot that it was a comedy, and I feel like it suffered because of it, because it went for some really common tropes. We'll get into that a little bit later, but like, I don't know, like I see this film as two distinct halves, and the first half is so much better than the second half.
Yeah, that's a fair enough observation. I don't know, like you were saying, I had really high hopes going into this film. I really wanted to like it, and you know, I guess I did enjoy it. I was entertained by it, but it did feel, I'm trying to think of the word, it didn't feel right. Like, there were some things about it that just felt like a little bit off, like you were saying, with the tone of the film being inconsistent, which I get. Like, there's films like Jojo Rabbit that perfectly meld drama and comedy really well, and then there's this film which it seems to just flip-flop between the two on scenes.
I think that's because of the style of comedy that it went for. Whereas so to stay on the Jojo Rabbit thing, having this really kind of serious setting and the hanging scene, to have that contrasted by having Adolf Hitler as an imaginary friend that gets kicked out of a window and all these silly things, that works so well because it's a perfect juxtaposition of the situation that they're in. Hitler isn't funny. What he's doing in this film isn't funny. But they do some slapstick comedy to him, which then just has this bizarre sort of feeling to it. It's got that juxtaposition, whereas this film doesn't do that. It's not taking something that should be serious and making it absurdly funny. It's trying to just be a generic drama film and also be sort of, I'd say generic comedy, but every comedy nowadays is just generic. So yeah. It's just trying to be normal funny and then normal sort of character developing drama thing. I'd say coming of age, but he's a bit too old for it to be a coming of age film. But at the same time, that's sort of the point, is that he's a bit old to be going through this sort of transformation. Like, he's supposed to be doing this in his teenage years, but he's a bit of a late bloomer. That's the point of his character. But like that melded with a mild comedy just sits fine. It's whatever, you know.
Yeah, like it was very lukewarm in terms of just the general film. Like, it wasn't anything fantastic or extravagant. It got a few laughs out of me. The story felt painfully generic. Like you've mentioned, there were a lot of tropes in there, and there was a lot of the, like, there's some things within the story that bugged me because they just felt unnatural.
Go on.
So, like, one of the major plot points that kicks things into gear is that the main character, he's an aspiring tattoo artist. He's done tattoos on all of his friends that are pretty crappy, and that none of them want to volunteer to, you know, be his victim anymore. And they're just hanging out at the beach, and then this little lad comes along, and he's like, yeah, I want the tattoo. And they're like, oh, you're only 10. He's like, yeah, screw it, I want the tattoo. And because this guy, he makes a lot of impulsive decisions. So he's like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm going to tattoo this 9-year-old. He draws a line on him. Then the kid freaks out, screams and runs away. Because obviously tattoos hurt, especially if you're 9 years old. Which leads to that child's dad confronting the main character's mother, giving her an earful, saying, you know, what the hell are you doing? How have you raised this kid? He's 24 years old and he's tattooing my child. And then the moment he finds out she's a single mother, he suddenly changes drastically. Like, he goes from being fully on the offense, typical Bill Burr shoutingness, to suddenly shy and awkward and then asking her out. And it's like, he seems to forget instantly that her child still tattooed his son. And I feel like that's a really unnatural thing. Like, he just seems to instantly forgive him because his mum's single and he fancies her.
Yeah, and it's like that happened because the plot needed it to happen, not because it's actually a logical thing.
Yeah, like that's my issue.
Yeah, like you could say, okay, well, that's sort of the point. Like, he is desperate to find another love after his first marriage, and like he's found this woman now who might be perfect for that. So he kind of forgets the initial conflict that they have, because if anything, he could say thank you to that conflict for actually bringing them together. But character-wise and emotionally, that there's, and as you say, an absolute just a switch just gets flicked from he's outraged and this is unforgivable to, oh, it's fine, I just want to marry you now.
Yeah, and like there is still beef between the two characters throughout the movie. So the main character is still trying to split up this couple of this new stepdad character and his mother, and is constantly fighting with him, sneaking behind his back to get dirt. And so the two are still like at each other's throats on and off throughout the movie. So it's not like there wasn't tension between the two of them for that to get brought back up. They could have been like, oh yeah, we can bring that up, say he's still resentful over that and that he was just trying to push it away. But they didn't even address it. It was that, like, as you said, like the plot demanded that he got over it. So he got over it.
Yeah, which is bad writing. And this, like, that isn't the main story of the film, which is why I kind of called it a coming of age thing earlier, is
yeah,
that it's sort of this man-child sort of getting a bit of responsibility and growing up a little bit. We don't really see that much. They could have, for over a 2-hour film, they could have easily done more to develop his character.
Yeah.
But the bit of development that they did do, like at the end with the fire station bit, and he lives there for a bit and he starts working there, and you kind of get the sense of, oh, he's actually turning his life around. And they throw in a few jokes to show that he is still the same kind of character. He's not just a complete 180. But, right, why did they do it as like a Rocky montage? It's like 2.5 hours and they show the character development in a montage.
That was probably my favourite segment of the film because it felt very wholesome. And probably because it had like Steve Buscemi in it, and I love Steve Buscemi.
That was the story of the film, and they did it in a chuffing montage.
Yeah, like that spread out a lot more throughout the film would have been a lot more entertaining. Another issue I have, sorry, while we're on this topic, so obviously the whole arc is about him gaining maturity and moving forward as an adult. Towards the end, he has like the support of his mum and this new stepdad figure for him to go into this tattooing career through, like, he did a piece of artwork that the stepdad saw and he was like, yeah, okay, maybe he's good at it. And the stepdad was like, yeah, you can do a tattoo on me. I've never had one, but you can do my first. And it's meant to be like this nice heartwarming moment of like, oh, that's really cool. And he's been working on it throughout like this montage, another montage.
Yeah, they keep showing it. They don't show it us, and Bill Burr doesn't get to see it either. Like, we almost get to see that from the stepdad's perspective of don't get to see it and we don't know what's going on. It's this little thing that he's just been working on and it comes from that wholesome moment.
And yeah, and then it does the reveal of what's actually on his back at like the end of the film. Like, there's a little bit of a climax where the main character and the stepdad make proper amends by them rescuing this guy who's been shot or stabbed, or I can't remember what he's done, but he's bleeding profusely in the game to the hospital.
You don't actually, it's actually Action Bronson, the rapper.
Is it? I thought it was, I assumed it was someone.
Yeah, it's the guy who does that series on YouTube with the green screen, and Tyler, the Creator, is featured in it too. It's that guy. I was like, oh my God, I know him, and we actually paused it and Googled it, and it is Action Bronson who's in this film. It's not said what's up with him. He just walks in front of the fire station already wounded.
Yeah. So at that moment, the main character's mother, who was a nurse in the emergency room, comes over and they're all chatting, and she sees his back with the tattoos and she's like, what's that? And then you finally see the tattoos. And it's all these really crap images. And one of the things he said when they said, don't make it anything I can't understand, like Chinese writing, tribal tattoos. And it is, it's everything he told him not to. The one redeeming thing about it is that there's a portrait of their family, of the main character, his sister, his mom, and this stepdad figure from a point earlier on in the movie. That's like the only redeeming factor over it. And that kind of ruined it a bit for me.
Yeah, it's one step forward, two steps back for a character after they've just shown him go through character development in a montage, so they haven't even spent much time doing the thing, and then they go back on it. So what's the point?
I don't know. Like, they even address the fact that this guy's really good at art, because he has this really cool superhero that he drew based off of what this stepdad's other son has been telling him about. He's like 8 years old. So it's like this really professional looking artwork. It's like, wow, that's awesome. Like, he's actually, you know, been working on this throughout the film. Those crappy tattoos, all that rubbish stuff he's done at the start, that's left behind, and now it's some real like pro looking shit. That's great. And it's,
switch has been flicked, there's the joke. Great, you've just ruined all your character development.
Yeah, I'm all for subversion, and like in a joke especially, but not at the cost of what you've been trying to do for your film. Because like, I was just like, not upset, but I was disappointed by it. Like, the fact that they did that, and it was like, right, logistically, what's going to happen now? He's going to see it eventually, and pretty much everything they've strived towards is probably going to be fucked. The already relatively strained relationship that's got pushed to like new areas has just been fucked. And that bothered me a bit, and it ties back to what you were saying with like the tone, how it's inconsistent and can't decide where it wants the bits to be. And when they do land, it's not fantastic.
Yeah, so as I said, I kind of see this film in two parts, because I think the first part is really quite good. I think the chemistry between the characters, especially Scott and all of his friends, like those four friends, I think they've got maybe five.
Yeah.
That group has really great chemistry between the actors, and they kind of riff off each other. And that scene where they're smoking and playing games and just kind of chatting, and you find out, that's like the scene where you find out that Pete's dad died. Like, fine. Like, that was really kind of nicely done. Like, there aren't actually that many jokes per se in the film. It's just that the chemistry between the characters and the general vibe that comedians have when talking to other comedians is funny.
So
there's a decent amount of like little laughs in there, and there's nothing exactly like that you're going to start wailing at. It's not that funny, but there is this kind of comedic tone because it's a load of comedians kind of talking to each other. Great. That, if that was the entire film, would have been better than what they went with, because for the second half, they kind of dropped that tone a little bit in order to give some proper character. They brought Bill Burr into it, and at that point, it did kind of take a turn that it was just a really kind of generic story about the man-child that's still living at home with his mum has to deal with a stepdad who's come in and doesn't want him there anymore. Generic conflicts happen. There's some childishness on both sides. They both kind of get blamed for it. The mum is the grown-up in the situation, even compared to like the stepdad. And then there's a bit of character development with Scott. I also called him Pete because that's the actor's name. That kind of shows a bit of, oh, he has grown up a little bit, which then they 180 on, and then it's like the end of the film. So that second half, what was the point? If they weren't going to take away from the comedic tone to give a little bit more character and like drama to it, if they weren't actually going to follow through on that, why take away the comedic vibe? Unless they didn't. A lot of comedies do fall into the trap of the like the third act especially just isn't funny because they feel like, because it's a film, they have to have that arc. So they have to have the dip just before the third act and then like an actual redeeming thing that happens for the climax. And that means that they just don't make it funny. But this did it for the entire second half and it wasn't worth it at all.
No, and it's a shame because like I really liked the cast. I really like Pete Davidson. Like I think he's funny. I like him when I see him in things. I'm compelled to like him. I don't know what it is. And so that's one of the things that immediately drew me to this film. And then like seeing the rest of the supporting cast and like you were saying, the chemistry between like the group of the friends is great. And I don't know, it upsets me that the writing let it down.
Mm-hmm. So to go on to the writing, so the director writer that worked on this is Jude Apatow, I think. Pete Davidson also helped write this. And a lot of this is sort of based on Pete Davidson's actual life. So Pete Davidson actually had a dad who was in the fire team, what they called? It was a firefighter. And he died during 9/11. So obviously in this film, it's changed a little bit. It was a hotel fire that he had died in. But a lot of this film is based on that, which is fine. And apparently Jude has directed a fair amount of films where he takes a comedian and does a film loosely based on their life for some reason. But like, this isn't a biopic, obviously. It's sort of loosely based on it. But they didn't lean into it enough to make it really emotional, because they could. Like, the whole dying in a fire thing, that, and then him having that kind of relationship with the firefighters at the end, that could have been, like, a really big emotional thing, because it was him kind of coming to terms with who his dad was. Like, his dad was seen as a hero. Like, I feel like a better name for this film would have been The Hero of Staten Island, and actually made it reference to the father and made that a bigger point of the film. I think that would have been better, but whatever. So they could have really lent into that, but they didn't. It was all about this stepdad character and kind of the thing there, which, as we've already said, didn't go really anywhere because everything that they did do ended up getting backtracked. So what was the point? Why did they do that? Why would you do like a half thing based on the main actor's actual life if that's just background?
Yeah, like that's the sort of thing that there is like raw emotion and meaning there. Like that's something that you could get a lot of mileage out of, especially for a film like this. Like that really could have been pushed forward into the light more and built it more around that, whereas it just seemed to be they were the set pieces. Like, oh, these events, yeah, cool, we'll throw them in, and then just...
It's like they started with that. It's like they were like, right, take things that happened in Pete Davidson's life, right, cool, right, what are we going to do? Oh, we could have this thing where we have the stepdad character, and then we'll build into that. Oh, maybe the stepdad character could actually be like a fireman, like what, like my actual dad was. Oh, yeah, let's do that. All right, okay, so how are we going to do that? Well, he could maybe, like, go to the fire station, and, like, you just build and build and build until that original idea isn't relevant anymore. They could have easily swapped a few pieces around and it would have had nothing to do with Pete Davidson's life. And if they'd have done that, they could have molded it into a more cohesive piece and it probably would have been a better end product.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that. So what they did do was make this film that's probably made me laugh a little bit more than like any film to have come out this year. But that is an incredibly low bar. So like what it achieved isn't that good. Like I would say if this first half of this film was made into a full film, like it was just that vibe, that tone, it didn't do the entire thing with Bill Burr like at all. It was probably getting ready for like an 8 out of 10. Like I thoroughly enjoyed the first half of the film, provided that it kind of paid off and kept on the same track, but it didn't. And I think that seriously, seriously hurt it.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm struggling to think of words right now.
I think that's a testament to it, though, is the fact that there isn't much to say about this film.
No, it's very bland. It's very just, it happens, and it's like the first thing I thought of when I was watching it, I was like, oh, this kind of feels like that sort of generic movie, like the generic drama movie that's on in someone's house when you get there. You never quite know where you are in the movie when you turn it on, because like the plot feels quite samey throughout. Like I thought it was gearing up to the end when Scott's mum threw him and Bill Burr out of the house. And I don't even think that was like halfway through the film.
Yeah.
Like he then goes through this bit of being homeless.
No, it was just a thing.
Yeah. I thought that was gearing up for the end. I thought, right, this is it. He's going to get his act together, roll credits in 10 minutes time. No, there was like this entire like third or something for the film.
I think that was just the setup to get him in the fire station.
Yeah.
Because he had to get to the fire station to have the montage. And there was no feasible way of him doing that, because the idea is that he's some like overgrown child that lives at home. So how do you get him into the fire station when he doesn't work there either? Have his mum kick him out. Right, okay, so now we've got to spend 20 minutes making that a feasible thing, so they've got to have a bit of conflict and then get to the point where he tips the mum over the edge just to do it. And that, I think, is why this is 2 hours and 20 minutes. Because there's so much of like, right, we need to get him to here. How do we do that? Right, we need to spend 20 minutes setting that up. And during all of that time, they forgot to make it good.
Also, so Scott's friends decide to rob a pharmacy to get some money. This is the point where Scott's like, yeah, I'm going to get some money and get my own house, and then I'll move out and then I'll show them I'll be a real grown-up. But it goes wrong, and Scott ends up in jail.
Yeah, that it was kind of like, it was the one last heist kind of vibe, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was the, yeah. I don't want to do this anymore, even though they hadn't really done it before, but whatever. Like, that, it was the one last heist, like, I'll do this and then everything will be okay.
Yeah. Before I go on to make my actual point, I feel like that, in like what you were saying with the first half of the film, that including like them just doing little shitty robberies would have been sick as a film. Like that vibe leading up to that.
Yeah, it would have. It'd have been better. Like,
yeah, like the chemistry that they had as well, especially like the berating that one that's like the newest member of the group.
Yeah, literally. And just the different... like a bit about these guys that are doing their best to try and make something of themselves. So they're doing it based on like these mild robberies, but they aren't that good at it and they're just kind of trying it and they don't really want to be doing it, but it's all that they've got, because that then plays into... the friend that wants to be like a city planner, that really plays into her thing, because she's doing it, but she sees the errors in it and wants to change that. That plus him coming to terms with his dad and like finding sort of a righteous path away from all this robbery into maybe becoming a firefighter would have been like a perfect parallel thing. Like have her as like a secondary main character that goes to try and do the city planning thing. So there's the bigger overarching like world building thing, and have him as the big personal thing, because it's actually personal to Pete Davidson as well, and have him become like a firefighter at the end. And it kind of is this perfect arc for both of them. But he didn't do that, and it should have. It really, really should have. Sorry,
I feel like even if they... No, it's fine. I feel like even if they did that as the A plot, and then still sort of had the stepdad thing going on with the B plot, would have made it so much more tolerable, because that could have added more motivations to the crime and everything.
Entirely.
But going back to what I was going to originally say, so the whole thing that leads him to going to the fire station is that he can't find anywhere to stay. He gets back with his girlfriend who he split up, who he then bluntly asks, oh yeah, can I just stay here for a bit? And she realizes that he's a fucking idiot. And just kicks him out. Yeah. Yeah. Then he's sleeping in people's gardens, sleeping in people's porches, and then reluctantly goes to the fire station where he knows Bill Burr is currently living, because he's currently homeless after splitting up with his ex-wife. Before he resorts to that, he goes to visit his friends who are in jail and speak to one of them to ask if he can please stay at his house. His friend's like, no, but you can feed my cat. Why didn't he just stay at the house anyway? Like,
that's a really good point.
Surely the cat was in the house. He wouldn't have known. Like, he was that desperate.
Was that
not
just put in there for the joke of how this guy's got a cat and he cares about it?
I don't know if it was.
Because otherwise, like, what's the point in even putting that scene in the film?
Probably, yeah. Because it was like, oh, yeah, I love Sprinkles. Like, his cat's called Sprinkles. So it is the joke of, oh, this criminal, this guy in jail's got a cat called Sprinkles.
Yeah. And they wanted to pay off the joke of the other friend getting catfished.
Yeah, which, fair enough. I liked that bit.
I mean, neither of those things were very funny. Like, it was fine.
Yeah.
But, like, that makes a big plot hole for no reason. Also, who's been looking after his cat all this time?
Yeah, like, up until that point, who's been feeding his cat?
If he's like, oh, you could feed my cat, what if he didn't turn up that day? What if he went and visited him 2 weeks from then? His cat's just going to be dead. That's
Also, what? Who's, why? Like, who else would he have asked if Pete Davidson's character hadn't turned up?
Sure, well, in a real-life scenario, he would have already have sorted that out. If he cares about sprinkles that much, he would have sent it to a shelter or anything.
But yeah, that was that's something that just came to me then. That I was like, hold on, why? Like, he's not going to be there. Just stay there for a bit. Get your shit together.
Yeah.
Granted, then that obviously wouldn't lead to any sort of moral epiphanies that result in the culmination of the film.
That's not. But that wasn't the only way to get there.
No, like, they could have got to that last bit much more better. Even if it was something like, going back to what we said about if they did this as like a more crime film, focusing on the group of friends pulling off jobs and things like that. Maybe if they did it like, oh yeah, we're gonna rob the firehouse while they're out on a job. Something like that. Something that's got that moral conflict for him. Like, something like that could have led to him being confronted with those characters.
I would say that's incredibly generic, but I get your point, and it would have been better than this.
Yeah, my point is trying to find something that would force those characters to interact other than what we got.
Yeah, well, because what we got was him resorting to, well, the firehouse is the only place that I can go now. That is my last resort. And it's like, it's not. And B, like, well, because he spends a night on the streets, doesn't he? He actually, like, he's sleeping in someone's garden, and then someone comes and shouts at him, and he's like walking through the night and whatever. Like,
yeah.
He didn't have to do that, especially if he's now feeding sprinkles and therefore has access to the house that he was just denied access to. But there was a million ways that they could have got him connected to the fire station, and have it be his last resort might just be the worst of all of the options.
Yeah. I mean, by that logic, there's going to be a fucking horrible homeless epidemic in Staten Island because there's no homeless shelters. And anyone that gets, like, that's worse off is just living on the streets.
True, but at the same time, I don't think people who have never been homeless before want to resort to that first. I think that is seen by a lot of people as, well, if I go to the homeless shelter, that means I am homeless. Whereas if I just sleep on this bench here, I'll be fine tomorrow. I'll sort something out.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a real thing, but, like... Yeah, no, it didn't. There's a lot of decisions that this film made in its writing, and it was the downfall. The casting was fantastic. The vibe, especially for the first half, was really good. It looked fine. The central elements of what was going to make the plot up, this sort of overgrown child's father that was part of the fire force and fire force, like police force, like he was a firefighter. And then him having some form of, like, coming-of-age style film, all of that could have been so good with this cast and, you know, everything else. And then it was just written kind of shit.
Yeah. Like, they had a lot of the pieces there and they just didn't put it together very well.
No. Which is why this has ended up at over 2 hours long. There was a lot of convoluted ways of getting to certain places, and not enough time spent on certain things, which is ridiculous for a film this long that did so little. And yeah, that's what we've ended up with. So I'm going to ask you this every single episode. What would you give this out of 10, Matt?
5. Like, I was, as I previously mentioned, I was compelled to like the film. I was disappointed, but I liked the characters. I liked the cast. As you said, the presentation was great. I liked the general vibe of the film. It was just the writing and the plot that really let it down and was disappointing, ultimately. Like, there was a lot of stupid, unnatural decisions made by the characters that really sort of bothered me throughout and after the film. Mm-hmm. And that's why that's what made it so weak, in my opinion.
So, I'm going to show it you in action. I mentioned this previously about how I will give sort of in my head as a film finishes, I'll give it a score, and then quite often within a week, it's changed a little bit. So this is something for you, Matt. I have changed the Iron Giant to a 7. On my Letterboxd, if you look now, it is a 7. I have put it up. I should have given it more credit in my numbers, because in the actual review, I did give it credit.
Vindication. Continue.
Back to Staten Island. So, in my little short review that I put on Letterboxd, I said that the first half of this film was an 8 out of 10, and the second half was a 6 out of 10. Therefore, it's a 6 out of 10. But talking to you now, I think I've definitely realized that the first half is only an 8 out of 10 if it kept that going. And it doesn't, which means that it is dragged down by the second half. And as we've just talked about, there are so many issues with it. The second half isn't a 6 out of 10. It's lower than that. There are too many issues. And there are too many obvious things that they could have done that would have made it better. So, yeah, 5. Bang in the middle. There were some bad things in this film, and there were some really quite good things in this film. So it averages out 5. 5 out of 10. Bang in the middle. I wish this was better. Ladies and gentlemen, that is it. Thank you very much for listening. If you are listening on Spotify, give it a follow. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or whatever, give it a save, a rate, you know, whatever you have to do on the thing that you're listening to. Thank you.
Alternatively, you can check us out on Twitter or Letterboxd to see us chat more shit about movies and other things. Thank you for listening.
That was awful, but yeah, bye.
Bye.